is the Youth Worker Collective podcast from Young People's Ministries. You don't have to be in ministry alone with resources, coaching, games, and more at umcyoungpeople.com.
All right. Jeremy,
hey, the number of times you say something that makes me snort right before pressing the go live button, man.
The timing is very important for when you push the go live button, because
that's right.
It's good to be able to laugh with the people that you hang out with and process feelings with and figure out faith
that's
with.
That's right.
In my opinion, I do think Jesus had a fairly reasonable sense of humor. Because all the walking that he and the disciples would have had to do, like, listen, you're going to have to be able to laugh a little bit about the things that
that's
you would have
right.
gone through being a disciple following Christ. Anyways, Jeremy, great to see you. We are going to have a conversation today, not about you going viral on TikTok. However,
no,
that is hashtag part of what you're experiencing us. Today as we record. Hashtag what, just to make sure everybody catches it?
He gets us. That's the... anyway, you can.
I'm thinking that's got to be a future
episode.
Find me
on TikTok. Just chase me.
Okay, if I start to see the reflection of the phone in your glasses, I'll know you're getting pulled away by commentary on your viral post. We will have to do a He Gets Us sooner or later. We won't do that today.
Not today.
Actually, what we're going to do today is going to be a conversation about episode number 150 of the Youth Worker Recharge. Which is going to get
episode numbers.
Just, yeah, I know. Super official.
Yeah, I can't believe you could pull that out of your brain. Great.
It's because it
Cheers.
Was the last one that I got an email about. So it was right there on top. Very easy to identify, right? when that one comes out, it'll actually be publicly available later this week. It is a conversation with two students who are at Asbury College in Kentucky in the U.S., who were able to be a part of what kind of virally got picked up as the Asbury Revival. Something that I learned in that conversation with them is that internally they're not calling it a revival. They are calling it something else. They're calling it an outpouring. And so I'm trying to figure out what that means and why that choice might have been made for naming something different, a nomenclature. But that kind of gave us the idea for today's conversation. And it really is about, well, from a youth ministry perspective, a couple of different pieces. One of them is, when do you embrace the Spirit, Jeremy? And when do you stick with the schedule that you set, right? Because when you're thinking about youth camps or retreats that you've planned or worship services that you might be in charge of, confession, I'm always one of those people that, like, if I go to a 9:30 in the morning worship service, I kind of expect it to be over by 10:30. And if it's not, I get a little agitated unless I'm really into what's happening. So from a youth ministry planning perspective, I don't know, when do you embrace the Spirit? What situations have you come across with youth camps and those kind of things where you are kind of forced into making those choices?
Well, and I also just want to, like, back up about a step and a half, because you mentioned the Asbury Revival thing, right?
Yeah.
Right. And we're a year later from that. It was all over news, and there was all kinds of, I mean, like, you could see it everywhere. It was a big deal. And
it was a big enough deal that it got picked up outside of, like, Christian news sources, right? It became part of, you could find it on CNN or USA Today, right? Like, it got kind of picked up by mainstream media. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think, first off, just brief overview. Basically, this is a super conservative Christian college that has this, like, Wesleyan DNA to it. Asbury is a famous United Methodist bishop who basically, and I don't send me hate emails. I know this isn't perfectly accurate, but basically started United Methodism, or started the Methodist movement in America. Like, it wouldn't have been what it was without Asbury. You can read great biography, An American Saint by John Wigger, if you want to really deep dive into it.
Yep.
But so it's at this college. They have chapel every week that you've got to go to because it's a Christian college. That's one of the things. And they start having chapel, and it just keeps going. And it keeps going. And then it goes all through the night and the next day. And then days and days and days pass. People come from all over. I mean, like, thousands of people. There was, like, these throngs of people. And this is like this little rural town outside of Lexington, Kentucky. It was kind of a mess and crazy. And it was being championed at the time by like that, the kind of people who the population who would send their kids to that college. Right. So it was like a lot of the more conservative pieces of Christianity, and especially if they had a connection to Methodism, that was happening. A lot of college ministries and all kinds of things like that, that were in that same ethos, right? Mm-hmm. In that same sort of perspective, all were kind of converging on Asbury. And this is not the first time this happened at Asbury. There's been a couple of other times in its history that they've experienced what they're now calling an outpouring, but before they called a revival. And it's not been, it's been its own thing there. It's never been the kind of revival like I experienced when I was growing up. I went to a revival in Pensacola, Florida, and went to it multiple times. And it was super charismatic, right? Just think about like what you imagine when you hear like charismatic revival, people falling on the floor, people speaking in tongues, all of those kind of things. This was not that.
Yeah.
In fact, this was a lot of worship music, a lot of young adults giving testimonies about what God was doing in their life. And to be honest, they had like a live stream that you could watch, and I watched it. And to me, Chris, it gave me last night of youth camp vibes, super strong, right?
Sure.
Like I've been in that room. I know what that feels like. And that's a real thing that you have to think about and deal with when you are a youth pastor. Now, I'm monologuing here, Chris. Is it okay if I say one other thing, say a historical thing?
First things first, you said if you needed like any more Gen X cred, yes. When you said don't send me hate emails, I got it. Like, listen, Generation X inside me was like, yes, that's exactly how people communicate. Don't tweet. Don't do any.
Don't
of the
you
things. Send me
don't
an email.
You send me a telegram with hate on it. Stop.
All right. Yes, please go on.
Yeah. Okay. So, but this is the other piece that we've got to recognize, and like, I'm a more progressive person in general, which often carries with it this sort of like, I don't know about emotionalism and the supernaturalism of the whole thing. But our tradition, the Methodist tradition, has strong streams of this sort of very emotional, very supernatural spirituality, particularly in America. And but even in England, even at the very beginning, I mean, there were people doing all of the things that you hear about and see if you ever like turn on TBN, right? The people falling down, all that stuff that was happening in the Methodist movement from the very beginning. And people were troubled by it. They were having conversations saying like, I don't know if this is real. These people are like sketchy and like doing this weird stuff that makes me uncomfortable, and saying that God is doing it to them, that they don't have control over it. So it was from the very beginning a big part of what was going on in Methodism. And John Wesley, our founding dude, right? His thing was really like, I can't control this. And he said, all I want to know is like, do they live different lives now as a result of it, right? If they fall out on the power under the power of the Holy Spirit, and the next day they wake up and they're just as horrible a person as they were the day before, then no, it wasn't a real thing. But if they fall out under the power of the Holy Spirit and the next day they go and start serving the poor, maybe it was a real deal, right?
Yeah.
And so it was that sort of like life change that Wesley asked for as the way to deal with this and to understand it. And so that's really always what I'm looking for, is like, okay, you're going to do this thing. Like, okay, tomorrow, what's in like a month from now, a year from now, like what's different? Like, where are you in a different place as a result of this? So that's my history lesson. So now let's talk about last night of camp.
Well, and there's the link to your last night of camp experience, right? Because We have talked about some of the developmental opportunities that you have as a leader before. We've talked about the need to be able to engage people on multiple levels, right? Like Wesley would have been active in what was called the Age of Reason as well, right? So we can talk about Methodism as a religion of the heart and the head. There is this emotional component to it. There's also this logical component to it.
Yeah.
If you're doing last night of camp stuff, when somebody is worn down, physically tired, mentally exhausted, emotionally kind of exhausted as well, depending on the programming or the worship or, you know, those kinds of things that you've chosen to do. You do find yourself in situations where people might make a promise or might say something about like, yeah, I'm going to, you know what? Jesus is the center of my life from here on out. And that's like making this huge commitment or saying these really big, important words without a lot of meat behind them, right? Like, what does that mean? Right.
And without a lot of like volition, a lot of the active will of the person, when you wear somebody down, I'm ascribing intention. I'm not meaning that. When somebody is worn down physically, emotionally, like they have less capacity to think and critique. And especially if they're an adolescent or even a young adult, like the young adults at Asbury, they're in the same developmental phase as the teenagers in our youth group, just a little bit later version of it. When they are on that emotional track, the logic isn't engaged.
Yeah.
In the same way.
And they need somebody to be able to come alongside them in the times after that moment, right? To help them process what that does really mean or what it might really look like. Because again, back to the experience that would have been at Asbury College, that's a year ago now, right? So that would have been long enough that you would hope that there are some kind of spiritual mentors or guides or, you know, teachers or peers that are still helping you kind of peel back the layers of whatever your experience happened to be. So when it's the last
night. And if you want to hear what is happening right now year later, you can listen to that podcast episode.
That's right.
You talk about
that's
that.
Right. Yeah. thinking about that experience from the organizer's perspective, and this will be a little bit nerdy of me, right? Just because I've had to plan some fairly good size events related to youth and young adults in my time. And I know that there is a calendar.
Let's not pretend. You have planned some of the biggest events with teenagers in the United Methodist Church in its history. So like, there's real cred here. Like, not like there were a couple hundred kids there. We're talking about thousands, 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 thousands of people, like convention centers. We're talking about a big deal. So like, I just, you wouldn't say it, but like, let's just be clear what level of expertise that we're getting to engage with.
That's right. I'm incredibly important and everybody should listen to me. Thank you, Jeremy Steele. So there are a lot of moving parts when I'm talking about planning an event for thousands or, you know, people that are coming from around the world to be in one place at one time. There are logistics that go with that, right? Where I say, you know, worship is going to be, this is when it's going to start. This is when it's going to end. These are when people go to workshops. This is the flow of traffic. These are how you move people. You want to have,
this is when the buses are going to show up to take people back to their hotels.
Would you like to have communion with 8,000 people? Yes, I would. Okay. How many stations do we need? Where's everybody?
How do you
serving?
Do that?
How is the flow of people? Like, those kinds of things are real things. And I always have to hold that stuff in tension with knowing that I'm trying to do these things that do invite a really honest experience with God or the presence of the Holy Spirit in some way. And to be honest with you, if I was getting into a situation where I had planned for something to be 90 minutes and all of a sudden it's at 95, I'm concerned. And that's not even on like revival or outpouring level yet, right? Like we're talking about something bleeding into an overnight or a day or any of those kind of things. And so I know I would find myself thinking about the people leading worship and saying, oh my gosh, okay, so they've now been on stage for 3 hours and they need a breather. Yeah. They need something
they need a backup.
Else. Yeah. Any backup. And so if we're going to dial up, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you're fine.
I was going to say, if we're dialing it to like a local church level, right, where we are talking about like a last night of camp or a retreat, I'm sure that we have been in the situations where we're gathered around a campfire or you've got that closing worship going And there's those two kids that just love to pick up the guitar even after the official worship service has ended. And they're just going to sit and jam for Jesus until you as the youth leader stop them.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a vivid memory of this. I had my youth leadership team go on a retreat to plan our year. And it was like the end of the summer. It was beautiful. We were out on a floating dock. We had a worship service and it was great. Like it was one of those like moments where it felt like you glimpsed something of another world, right? Like these are kids that were in very traditional church, were not prone to emotionalism or anything like that, but it just happened. They ended up standing up and like dancing, right?
Yeah.
And not in a weird way. Like it just happened. We were having a great time. It was like, it was so joyful. And we did the thing, we talked, and then we kept worshiping. People started trickling back, right? Tired, sleepy, it's getting late.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that handful of kids that are out there still playing the guitar, still singing, some of them still dancing, bless their hearts. And we can't have them out there by themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right?
We have to have adults there. At the very least, like they're literally floating on water. Like they could fall off and drown. And I remember like in that moment, just being like, we've got to go to bed, guys. And it was, they were not happy.
Sure.
And they felt like I wasn't valuing their religious experience. And in some ways I wasn't, if I'm completely honest, because I was going to have to get on a church bus and I was going to have to drive it very early the next morning. And, but at the same time, like I didn't want to kill the kids on the church bus. So like, there's like this weighing of things. And, I sort of forced it to shut down and went back. We went back and I mean, we woke up the next morning, everybody was okay. Right. Like it was fine. And I think that there's a handful of things that there's that. Then there is like you can, and I didn't quite understand what was happening at the very beginning of my career in youth ministry, but as I went forward, I could begin to sense some of the tricks of the trade, in moving people to these like very emotional moments and very heightened ecstatic spiritual experiences. And part of it is, people are programmed before the experience.
Sure. Sure. And I actually, right? That's, I don't know if I would use the word programmed, right? But that is—it's
called anchoring. Is a psychological term. Yeah,
sure, sure. But there was a dynamic to that that our two guests, when talking about their experience at Asbury, there were previous experiences that prepared them to have this sort of larger, ongoing spiritual experience. It wasn't just out of nothing. So
So the sort of playbook that I've seen used, and I don't know, I, at the time, would not have ascribed any nefarious intent to people, right? They were all good-hearted, trying to do God's work, I think. But so it would start with leaders, right? And the leaders would, the speaker, the leader, whoever it was going to end up taking people to this place. Not like spiritually taking them there, not like physically driving them. Would start in at the very beginning, like, here's what's going to happen. These things, I want you to know, you can expect that this is going to happen, that this might happen at some point, that this might happen at some point when the Spirit really moves. I've seen people do this or have this experience, and it happens multiple times. So it's like, sort of like putting in people's head this sort of expectation in a leadership setting, right? So there's like the leaders are sort of begun to be, their minds are in like, this could happen. This might happen. This is what I could look for. This is what I might be able to expect, right? All of these things. And for some subset of them, there's an excitement about that, right? Yeah. Oh, wow. We could see that happen here. Oh my gosh. Like people, you spoke somewhere and when you prayed for people, they fell down. That was, oh my gosh, I've never been, you know, like there's an excitement, an energy to that. Yeah. And then they do the same thing sort of over and over in their talks, in their stories. Their stories, they'll tell a story about a person who has a spiritual experience. And they sort of say, oh, and like they did this thing. This thing happened to them. They experienced this, whatever, right? And they build on that. And there's it's not always explicit. It's not like, and then I prayed for them and I touched their head and they fell down. It's not always like that, but there is this like this push of like, oh, when you are feeling spiritual, supernatural things happen, you see things, you hear things, you like that kind of like pushing that, like the norming a response that is supernatural.
Sure.
Or whatever, a response that like, oh, it goes on forever, right? I was at I've literally heard like, oh yeah, we started this worship service and it just didn't stop until 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. Like I remember hearing that at a camp one time and thinking, oh, please, I can't do this at 4 a.m. and then start Bible study at 7, right? Like, please don't say that. Don't put that expectation out there. But what it does is it primes the pump and it gets especially like formative adolescents, like their brain is like thinking about this. And then I hear in the cabins, oh man, can you believe that they saw that happen? Like there's a buzz and an expectation about that. And
if I can jump in there too,
yeah,
I think that there's also like this may not be the right term for it, but like almost a social emotional response to that as well.
Yes. Right. Like, no, for sure.
I want to avoid trying to use a term like groupthink because that comes with a lot of different baggage. But when you're in a group setting, yeah. Part of the anticipation that leadership would be building, yes, impacts individuals, but part of that preparation and anticipation is also for what responses might look like. And then,
right.
You know, I've been in settings where a kid might feel left out. Because they haven't gotten that experience or they didn't have that experience. And so,
or they would feel like God didn't speak to them, didn't love them, or they didn't experience God correctly because that didn't happen.
Sure. Sure. So there's that part to it. And then sometimes the response is, maybe not a genuine experience, right? Like someone will do something because this is what I'm supposed to do, or this is the reaction that I'm supposed to have. So I'm going to kind of, you know, feign or pretend that I'm having this very deep emotional experience because I want to feel like I fit in, because that's the expectation that's been set for this activity, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's all sorts of psychology at play. There's actually been some really fascinating. There's like some magicians that actually do some of the same kinds of things to like show how it happens, how people can be overcome. It's really fascinating.
Yeah.
So, and I think what's important is to realize like for me, I like really don't like that sort of setting that stuff up and really pushing that, because oftentimes it's misused and mishandled.
Sure.
Because on the last night of camp, it's going to be emotional. I've never gone to a camp where there wasn't some sort of like emotional moment on that last night.
Well, and when we say camp too, like I don't want to just lock it into that, right? It could
retreat,
be an extended
whatever.
Retreat. It could be a mixed experience,
I mean.
You know, any of
right.
those.
Oh, all of those. All
right?
of them.
Like all of
I grouped them all into camp, but yes, you're right.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, I knowing that that's going to happen, I want to plan for that.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that it's handled and used carefully so that it's not easily invalidated later. Right?
Yes.
Or harmful also. I mean, like, obviously, well, I don't
sure,
want
sure, because when emotions are activated, right, it is easier to feel discounted or if something doesn't go right with follow up or, you know, those kinds of things. I think the other thing that I want to make sure to lift up is, you know, just the recognition that it is important to be able to create space for these kind of experiences to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, absolutely.
There are genuine spiritual experiences that are going to happen under your leadership of a ministry activity, whether that's worship, you are at camp, you are on a retreat, whatever. So you do have to figure out how to, you know, embrace those when they do come along. And part of that for me is the processing that happens afterwards. Hopefully that's come across really clearly in the conversation so far. It's not like you have these one-off experiences and then, you know, a young person just gets launched into whatever their faith is going to become. The ongoing relationships that are part of a faithful community or part of like a community that cares about discipleship are really important to help a young person process the thoughts and feelings that might happen with those experiences. Yeah. So my encouragement for leaders is to, well, like, not necessarily over program or over script, right? Like, be authentic in the stuff that you want to share, be authentic in the experiences that you want to create. And then allow time during that camp or during that retreat or after a youth group for processing to happen, whether that's with you as the leader, with your other responsible sponsors that are around, or in between the peers and the youth themselves, because you need time to be able to make sense of the experiences that you've had, if that makes some sense.
And I think just be realistic, know what happens, what are the potential outcomes, and plan for what you're going to do, right? It's the last night of camp. It might go longer. Don't program something that's super essential right after, right? Right. Don't do it. Just leave it blank on the schedule and it's okay. And then sort of put in your head, like, you know, we're going to wrap this up at whatever time. There's a safe time to do that. And it's okay to turn off the lights. It's okay to turn off the sound. It's okay to like let it go and move on and pick it up again tomorrow in the fresh light of day.
Because
feeling is that if the Holy Spirit, if a movement of the Holy Spirit can be stopped by turning off the sound system for a couple of hours, then I'm not sure if it was really a movement of the Holy Spirit, right? If you want to stay up all night, stay up all night. Like, I'm not that person. But if it really is the power of God, then it can transcend time and it can allow people to take a break and rest, especially when they've got to drive the church bus the next morning. But don't sacrifice safety and the care of your students for the sort of spiritual guilt that you might feel for shutting something like that down. It's okay. You can shut it down. It's going to be fine. God is going to go with them to the beds. God is going to be with them when they wake up, and just do that. And that's what I try to prepare my volunteers for, right? Like, it's going to be emotional. We're going to be around. And at some point we're just going to wrap things up. And I'm going to need you to help me do that.
Yeah, right. Well, Jeremy, thanks. I know we could talk probably quite a bit longer on this particular topic, but we do try to keep ourselves really faithful to a half hour. If you are interested in listening to past podcasts or episode 150, where we talk with the two students from Asbury, AJ and Sam, you can find that later on at umcyoungpeople.org. And this one will be archived there as well. Jeremy, thanks as always. And we'll see you next Monday for our next Youth Worker Recharge.
See you then.